Sangye Chutang Soki Cho Namwa Jang Chu Bardu Dag Mi Kyab Su Chi Dagi Jin So Gi Pi So Lam Gi Dro Hapin Jir Sangye Du Pan Shu. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. The virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. From the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparivara Ratna Mandala Buddha Mega Samudra Saparara Samaya. Oh, welcome. So we're continuing with the precious ornament of the three visions, precious human rebirth. And just as a reminder, the precious human rebirth study is to develop and promote what quality?
Diligence.
Just a reminder there. We're sort of in the depths of karma and how it works. And on page 100, we got as far as number 9 in the description of how karma works and what makes it strong or not strong. Number 9 is according to the perpetrator. Who feels like reading first off the bat here tonight?
By perpetrator. Whatever virtue or sin is done, the result is much more powerful if done by monks, by one who has taken vows to follow the precepts, or by those who have accepted a discipline. It is less powerful if done by a householder or by one who has not taken any vows. It was said in a sutra, greater than the merit of offering lamps that fill 3,000 great world systems to a stupa of Tathagatas by a householder, Bodhisattva, would be the merit of a monk Bodhisattva having lit some wicks dipped in oil which merely illuminate the doorstep of a temple in which a Tathagata stupa is installed.
So we touched on this a little bit last time, I think. When it says a monk one who's taken vows, you can be a householder and take vows. It's really the vows that determine the power of what you're doing. So we talked last time that if you refrain from killing an insect or something, but you haven't taken vows, you get merit for that moment. But if you've taken the vow not to kill, and you don't kill, you get merit continuously, even when you're sleeping. So it's really the vows that they're referring to here, rather than the fact that whether you're a monastic or not.
Mm-hmm. Similarly, there are three groups of four faults that are more likely to occur to one who has renounced the world and that are more powerful if done by them. These are, A, the four dharmas that cause one to go to the lower realms like an arrow being shot, B, the four dharmas that cause one to go quickly to hell, and C, the four dharmas that cause one not to find any time of release after having gone to the lower realms.
So I'll just make a comment about this word dharma here, because dharma is a word that has many, many different meanings. And you'll notice that here it's not capitalized. So we're not talking about the holy dharma of the Buddha's teaching here. We're talking about just regular actions. So don't confuse those, okay?
A. The four dharmas that cause one to go to the lower realms. According to Maitreya, these are: to summarize, for those with impaired vows to use objects that have been faithfully offered, to knowingly indulge in transgressions, to associate for a day with transgressors, and to hate the good fortune of others. These four faults are like an arrow being shot into hell.
Okay, just to be clear, we're talking here about people that have taken vows. Okay.
B. The four dharmas that cause one to go quickly to hell, according to the meaning found in the Bodhicaryavatara and elsewhere, these are to be arrogant, due to much gain and honor, to be proud, due to much learning, to be proud due to one's performance of moral discipline, and to be proud due to having helpful donors. And C, the four dharmas that cause one not to find any time of release after having gone to the lower realms. According to...
Yeah, I don't have the translation for that. It's a sutra.
And other sutras. These are: to be stained by root downfalls, to criticize the Bodhisattva, to be malicious toward the holy Dharma, and to hold wrong views. These are the four faults for which there is no release from hell. Out of fear of making this book too long by using many scriptural quotations, I will not write any more here.
So again, just to remember that the intended audience of this text was primarily monastics, and so they're really going through the seriousness of these offenses for monastics or vow holders. The consequences are much greater. Also for the good karma. So if you do a meritorious activity as a vow holder, you get more merit. But if you do bad karma, you get a more severe punishment. And that's why these punishments, things like being proud because you have donors, it's a heavier offense for a monastic. Normally, householders don't have donors. We work.
When it says to be stained by root downfalls, is there something more like...
Yeah, when you take a vow, and there's all kinds of vows. Vows is a big topic, but normally there are what are called downfalls, are if you violate the vow. And it depends on the vow that you take, you know, what the rules are, what the conditions are. It's really variable according to the vow that you take and the situation that you take it in.
So the use of the word dharma here, what does it mean? The small d dharma here.
Yeah, that's an action, like being proud or...
Oh, okay, so the four acts, so basically the actions.
Deeds arising out of the motivation of hatred are greater in power than any other non-virtue. As it was said...
Yeah, I don't have the translation for that.
The sin of producing anger against any living being... One time by a Bodhisattva who has entered the great vehicle is greater than his experiencing sexual desires for 100,000 eons. Now that's quite a comparison.
Yeah, again, this is aimed at monastics, and sex is one of the four downfalls that ruin your monastic vows, so it's a big deal.
Similarly, it is also taught that all the roots of virtue collected through hundreds and thousands of eons are destroyed at once if one produces a thought of anger for a single instant toward a special object, such as a Bodhisattva, as it was said in the Bodhicaryavatara. All good deeds accumulated through 1,000 eons, like giving, making offerings to the Sugatas and the like, are destroyed in one fit of anger.
Yeah, there's a saying, there's no sin like anger, there's no practice like patience.
Mm-hmm. Also, it was said in the Majjhimikavatara, the virtues of giving and morality collected in hundreds of eons are destroyed in one single instant. Therefore, there is no sin greater than impatience.
Yeah, just for your knowledge, the Majjhimikavatara was written by Chandrakirti, who was a very famous philosopher that lived in the 6th and the 7th centuries. Okay, thank you. So, who would like to continue with number 10?
I'll do it. 10, by purpose. Virtues and sins done for the sake of others are of greater strength than those done for one's own sake. Therefore, even though one sins for the sake of others, the result falls only on the doer, while others do not share in that result. As it was said in Letters to a Friend, do not commit sins for the sake of Brahmins, monks, gods, guests, parents, sons, queens, and attendants, for there will be none to share the result of hell. Also it was said in the Shantideva, here in this very life many loved ones have passed away, yet the terrible sins committed for their sake remain before the doer.
Yeah, so this might require some explanation here. Because earlier it was said that if you cause somebody else to do a non-virtue, like you hired a killer, for example, that you also receive the negative karma for hiring the killer, even though you didn't actually physically kill somebody. But here it appears to be saying the opposite, but it isn't really. What this is referring to, I think, is if you decide, oh, I really like the king or the president, and I'm going to do something for them. I'm going to go kill their enemy. But you weren't actually instructed by the king or the president to do that or paid. You just got it in your head that you were going to do it for somebody else, and you thought you were doing something really good because you were thinking of somebody else, but it was a non-virtue. That other person's innocent. They don't get the negative karma, and you get all of it. So there's two different kinds of situations here, whether you actually pay somebody else or intend to cause somebody else to do a non-virtue, as opposed to you get it in your head, I'm going to do it for that person, the other person doesn't even know about it.
Like the killing of Thomas Becket, when the king said, well, no one will rid me of this troublesome. And someone did,
yeah.
Grief, the motivation is generally more important than the nature of the deed itself in determining virtuous and sinful deeds. An example is the case of the skillful ship captain who slew...
So there's a footnote here, 49. So let's go read 49. Otherwise, we don't know what they're talking about here. This is a famous story, which on page whatever it is, 215.
Isn't that a reference to when in one of Buddha's past lives he was a ship captain and
knew
about the thief?
Right? Yes. We're going to read about that right now.
You want me to read it? This example refers to one of the Jataka stories. The Buddha was born in that lifetime as a ship captain who killed one of his own sailors, known as Minangkabau, who was planning to kill the 500 traders who were traveling on that ship, to save those 500 men, as well as to save the sailor from committing a great non-virtuous deed. The captain killed the sailor.
So I think it bears mentioning that the Buddha was clairvoyant and he knew the outcome of the situation in advance, and therefore he intervened, so to speak. I don't think that means that we can just run around doing whatever we want and say, oh well, I had everybody's best interest in mind. But it does point out the fact that the motivation is the determining factor in the outcome from a karmic point of view.
But he did go to hell.
Who? For that?
Yeah, he went to hell, didn't he?
Did he?
My question is, if he was a sailor, and he wasn't the Buddha yet, how could he actually even be clairvoyant?
Well there is clairvoyant. Sorry?
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, when you reach very high levels of spiritual development, what are called the bodhisattva levels, the exalted bodhisattva levels, there's 10 of these levels. Even the very first level is extremely advanced. And there are all kinds of collateral powers that arrive from your spiritual development. You're not intending to develop these things. They just come about. And clairvoyance is one of them. And you have levels of clairvoyance, too. So
the sailor happened to be clairvoyant.
He was whatever level you need to be to have clairvoyance about what this guy's intention was. Actually, reading people's minds is not that advanced. There are psychics, you know, that can read people's minds. So I don't think it's considered, like, super high level spiritually. But it is something that he had at that time. At that moment, he was able to read the guy's mind and know what he was going to do. He did it also to save that person from doing the killing and the karma, not to mention the 500 lives that he saved.
Right.
Geshe-la told a story one time about, in Tibet there was a sort of evil king called Lang Dharma. Maybe some of you have heard of Lang Dharma. And he was anti-Buddhist, and he was destroying monasteries and killing monastics and just making chaos. He was suppressing Buddhism in a very evil, intense way, and it was destroying Buddhism, basically, in Tibet. He was the king. And there was a monk that decided that that was something that needed to be stopped, so he assassinated him with the motivation that it'll be the greater good of all. And he thought, and then I'll just go into retreat and do purification for the rest of my life. And his gurus went to him and said, you don't have to go on retreat. That was a dharmic act. That was actually a virtuous act because your motivation was good. These are kind of extreme examples, but it indicates the importance of motivation in the outcome karmically.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the question come up around this captain story of why did they just tie the guy up?
Because then they wouldn't have a story.
I have a story.
Well, next time you see the Buddha, ask him. I don't know.
Because it is an interesting question.
You know, stories are also, you know, they operate on the level of myth also. You don't necessarily have to be historically to the minute detail true.
Right.
Okay, so that's the story of the captain. You want to continue?
Sure. So the deed itself appeared to be non-virtuous. It is said that because the motivation was extremely noble, the virtue acquired amounted to the collection of merit accumulated during many eons. As it was said by the Dharma master Saipan Sakya Pandita Kubra Gyaltsha, with a steady mind for others' welfare, even if one performs the four defeats, which are a great sin for the Sravaka, they become a great virtue for a bodhisattva.
Okay, so we mentioned the four defeats last time. Does anybody remember what we talked about? So, first of all, who do the four defeats apply to?
Monastics.
So these are the four big sins that monastics absolutely cannot do, or you lose your monastic vows. Does anybody remember what
killing
they are?
Killing your mother, killing your father.
Well, that's the five heinous crimes.
Oh, the five heinous crimes.
But killing is one of the four defeats. So killing anybody is one of them. And then?
Stealing. Sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
And sowing discord.
That's one of the five heinous crimes.
Lying.
Lying about.
Your knowledge of the Dharma.
Your spiritual attainments
of
the Dharma.
Your spiritual attainment.
Like, I'm clairvoyant. I'm Buddha. I'm Bodhisattva. I'm whatever. Yeah. So those are the four defeats. But here we have another example of, we're talking about the Mahayana here, the greater vehicle here. And Sakyapandita is making an opposition to the Sravaka path. What is the Sravaka path? Remember? Is that greater vehicle? Is Sravaka greater vehicle?
No, that's part.
The hearers, the Sravakayana.
Yeah, it's
lesser.
It's the what I call the foundation path. We're trying to get away from calling it lesser because it's kind of not a very nice thing to say about somebody's path. We can basically divide Buddhism in a lot of ways, but one of the ways is into the two paths, the foundation path and the greater vehicle, or whatever you want to call it, the perfection path. It has different names. So Sakyapandita was a Mahayana, a greater vehicle teacher, and he's saying that for a, and this is a Mahayana text, obviously. So he's saying for a Mahayana practitioner, this thing about motivation applies, whereas for a Shravaka, for a foundation practitioner, it doesn't. They don't have the same system. Obviously, their paths are different, or they wouldn't be two different paths. So morality is really, really important in the foundation path. Morality is also important in the greater vehicle path, but it's tempered by this discussion about motivation. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
A similar case is that of practicing virtue through the three doors of body, voice, and mind. In order to win the confidence of others in one's own conduct for the sake of gaining honor and offerings, this has the momentary appearance of being virtuous, although it is in fact non-virtuous, and is known as a distracted notion. This is essentially the same as a hunter killing deer while wearing the yellow robes of a monk, or dishonestly selling donkey's meat while showing the tail of a deer. As it was said by the Master Sap, if one doesn't show the tail of a deer, one will not be able to sell the donkey's meat. Likewise, if one doesn't show good conduct, one will not be able to deceive through wrong ideas.
Okay, so this is a little bit... Well, it needs some explanation. First of all, Master Sapan is a contraction of Sakyapandita. Sapan is Sakyapandita, one of the five great founders. And this thing about showing the tail of a deer, apparently in, I don't know if this was Tibet or India, but in the meat markets, sometimes there would be dishonest meat vendors who would wave the tail of a deer saying, I have deer meat for sale, I have deer meat for sale, here's the tails to show you. But really it was donkey meat, he was misleading people.
And that goes on today.
Sorry?
And that goes on today.
Waving deer tails?
Well, lying about what you're marketing.
Yeah, so this is a reference to, I guess it was a common thing that happened in the meat markets there. So that's what that's about, waving the tail of a deer. It sort of became a symbol for... showing one thing when really there was another thing. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Therefore, since virtues and non-virtues depend on one's mind, which is the root of all sins and virtues, one should always strive in the methods that produce a mind of virtue. As it was said in the letters to a friend, a fearless one, the blessed one, said that the mind is the root of all activities. So tame your mind. This is beneficial and useful advice. So what need to say more? Also it was said in the Shantideva, one who wishes to guard the training should guard the mind with great care. This mind is not guarded, one will not be able to protect the training. As untamed elephant does not cause such harm, here is the unrestrained elephant of the mind which causes the harms of Avicii. Having thoroughly bound the elephant of the mind with the rope of mindfulness, all fears vanish and all virtues come into one's hand.
Yeah, thank you. So that concludes that section about the results of virtuous deeds. Interesting. So now, how do we transform neutral deeds into virtues by reflecting on them? We've talked about this before, but we're going to go into more detail here. Would somebody else like to read for us?
Sure. Transform neutral deeds into virtues by reflecting on them. The third category consists of A, thinking that neutral deeds are fruitless so that one should transform them into virtues, B, reflecting that neutral deeds have no results, and C, how to transform neutral deeds into virtues. Neutral deeds are fruitless. Neutral deeds are neither virtue nor sin, being the indifferent actions of moving, walking, sleeping, sitting, and the like. The reason for this is that there are actions of the three doors which are not influenced either by the above-mentioned three poisons of afflictions, nor by the absence of these three poisons. Neutral deeds have no results. Reflect further that neutral deeds are unable to produce any happy or unhappy result precisely because they are neutral. Thus, Master Sakya Pandita, since the indifferent actions are neither virtue nor sin, they have no good or bad results. Transforming neutral deeds into virtues. Neutral actions are good from the point of view of not producing suffering, but by not producing happiness, they are rendered useless. A person skilled in means must transform them into virtue. As it was said by Maitreyanatha, when engaged in the activities of a bodhisattva, whatever type of object confronts the sense organs should be transformed into benefit for beings by the use of appropriate words. Thus, to whatever appears as an object of the sense organs, one should apply appropriate words. So after having first produced a mind desiring to accomplish good for all beings, one should engage in any activity related to that object together with mindfulness and alertness. One should know the method of applying appropriate words as described in the summary.
That's the pure object of behavior of the bodhisattva.
Okay. If one is not able to practice to that...
Oh, wait. Written by Jnana Garba and also in the Bodhisattva's Noble Path.
Okay. And if one is not able to practice to that extent, one should practice as much as described here. When dwelling in the house, one should wish, may all living beings attain the city of liberation. When sitting on a seat, may they attain the Vajrasana, i.e. the seat of enlightenment. When lying down to sleep, may they attain the Dharmakaya of the Buddha. When rising, may they attain the Nirmanakaya. When putting on clothes, may they wear the cloth of piety and modesty. When bathing, may they be separated from the dirt of the afflictions. When eating food, may they gain the food of meditation. When leaving the house, may they be released from the city of worldly existence. When embarking on a path, may they obtain the path of the noble ones. When performing work, may they complete the two purposes. When entering the house, may they enter the city of liberation. Having arrived, may they reach the stage of Buddhahood and the like. One should know what appropriate wishes should be applied to whatever situation arises. These wishes are an elaboration of the meaning of the words in the Sakaya Katha. Fully endowed with mindfulness in moving, walking, lying down, and sitting.
Okay, so there's some terminology here that might be useful to describe. May they attain the Vajrasana, the seat of enlightenment. That actually refers to Bodh Gaya in India, where the Buddha attained enlightenment, and it's said that all Buddhas will attain enlightenment there. So the Vajrasana, or the seat of enlightenment, is an actual place. And then further down where it says, may they complete the two purposes. Now, there's a lot of different ways of describing things in Dharma, and one of the descriptions is how many bodies does the Buddha have. In some descriptions, the Buddha has two bodies, in some the Buddha has three bodies, in some the Buddha has four bodies. Here it refers to the two bodies. The two purposes refers to the attainment of the two bodies. The wisdom body, or sometimes called the body of truth, which is attained through the six perfections. We haven't really talked too much about the six perfections, but just to list them, they're generosity, patience, morality, joyous enthusiasm, meditative concentration, and wisdom. So the first five accumulate merit in order to attain wisdom or the realization of the true nature of reality, and that is the attainment of the Buddha's wisdom body. Okay, and then the second body in this case is what's called the Rupa Kaya, or the form body. Kaya means body, rupa means form. And that is attained by the four means of assembling disciples, which is a discussion that we won't go into now, but it's the practices of how do you actually share the Dharma to people in an appropriate way, I guess you would say. And that produces the what we would call the manifestation body or the physical body. In the case of Shakyamuni Buddha, who walked on the earth 2,600 years ago, that was an example of a form body, an actual human-looking person. So that's what they mean by the two purposes. Yeah, okay.
So those are the Dharmakaya and the
Dharmakaya and the Rupakaya in this case. If you're only listing two, if you're listing three, then you get into Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. If you're getting in four, then you add those Svabhavakaya. But these are discussions that are beyond tonight's reading. You want to continue, please?
Would you mind if I pass?
Yeah, who would like to continue?
I can continue.
Yeah.
I think we're at to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
To reflect on the meaning of this, one should think, alas, when the time of death befalls me, none of this life's wealth, property, dear friends, servants, and the like will follow me. At that time, all the virtuous and sinful deeds that I have done myself will follow me. One should reflect in detail about these deeds. The non-virtuous deeds arising from the three poisons are such, and among them, the three actions of body are such. The four actions of voice are such, and the three actions of mind are such. So there is no chance for any result other than that of going just to the three lower realms. Experiences are similar to their cause. That is, though one is born into the higher realms, one will be short-lived, destitute of wealth, and the like. There's also nothing but suffering. So suffering has not been transcended. Actions similar to their cause are also only sources of suffering from lifetime to lifetime. The result of ownership of non-virtuous action is that one must be born into unpleasant and faulty regions. Therefore, non-virtue is another name for the action of inflicting self-harm. But I have failed to understand this. In this life, I can remember having done many non-virtuous deeds, and there were also an inconceivable number which were done but are not remembered. Inconceivable also are those deeds which I caused others to do or rejoiced in when committed by others. Even more than that, upon the continuity of my consciousness, there are definitely an inconceivable number of impressions of sins committed in other lifetimes. Therefore, it is sure that I have no other destination but the lower realms. Up to now, by not knowing this, I have caused harm to myself like a madman. Alas, is this mind of mine wrapped in darkness, or has it come under the influence of Mara? Or am I a mindless object, or what am I? Alas, think thus again and again, and then think, now, if for the sake of this life I do not perform even a little non-virtue, then what to say about doing great non-virtue? In brief, I must never commit sinful deeds. If due to ignorance I happen to commit sins, I must train myself to confess them immediately without remaining associated with the fault for even a single day. Thus, think from one's heart. Concerning virtuous deeds, one should think, likewise, virtuous actions arising in the absence of the three poisons are such, and among them, the virtuous actions of body, voice, and mind are such, which one should think upon each one of these individually in detail. The ripened result is the body of high realms. The experience similar to its cause is the prosperity of higher realms, such as longevity and the like. The action similar to this cause is performance of virtues, which is the cause of happiness in all lifetimes. The result of ownership of virtuous actions is a physical world endowed with good qualities. In brief, virtuous deeds is just a name for the achievement of benefit and happiness for myself.
So excuse me while I interrupt you there, but I think it's just, for me anyway, there's two sentences here that jump out. One is, non-virtue is another name for the action of inflicting self-harm. And virtuous deeds is another name for the achievement of benefit and happiness for myself. If I just got that out of this book, I think it would have been worth it.
Therefore, virtues formerly done by me, or those I caused others to do, or those done by others in which I rejoiced, were each well undertaken. Moreover, without despising even small virtues, I must perform virtues devotedly. I must proceed without being overpowered by laziness or tardiness. I must accomplish it just now, and I must do it quickly.
Again, there's something worth noting here, which is, if somebody does a virtuous action or a meritorious action, and you see it or you know about it, and you rejoice in it, you get as much or more virtue as they did by doing it. So this idea of rejoicing is really an important concept to have here. It's this idea that we're all in the same boat, so to speak, and if somebody else has spiritual success or does something virtuous, and I rejoice in that, the merit is shared. You know, there are these people that do these incredible retreats and practices and all kinds of things. And if you rejoice in that, you get the same amount. Some teachers say you get even more. But in any case, it's a tremendous practice just to rejoice. And it's so simple. It's just that's how long it takes. And you get an accumulation of merit, which is, in a sense, the name of the game here, is accumulating merit in order to accumulate wisdom.
Thus think from the bottom of one's heart. Concerning neutral deed, one should think, likewise, since these present actions of mine, such as moving, walking, sleeping, sitting, and the like, are neutral actions which are tiresome and fruitless, I must make an effort to transform whatever I can of these into virtuous actions through skillful means. In brief, these torments of various sufferings arising since inconceivable lifetimes until now are only a result of the incorrect practice of accepting and rejecting sins and virtues. Now, if in this short life, where the time of death is unknown, I come under the influence of non-virtuous and neutral deeds, it is like reaching an island of jewels and returning with some poisonous plants, which is an action that destroys myself. Therefore, in every way, I must abandon non-virtues, perform virtues, and change neutral acts into virtuous without ever coming under the influence of Mara. May the preceptors see to it that it will happen so. Thus think and offer prayers. In all the intervals between sessions, contemplate as it was said in the Shantideva.
Mm-hmm.
The defining characteristic of protecting awareness is, in brief, only this, again and again, to examine the state of body and mind.
And what's a word that summarizes that, that's really popular these days?
Mindfulness,
yeah.
Having examined one's own behavior again and again, if the three doors of body, voice, and mind are attuned to the teaching, then rejoice and know that it arose through the kindness of the Triple Gem. It should happen like this in all my lifetimes. Think thus, and to whatever extent one can, increase one's good behavior. If the majority of one's actions are either non-virtuous or neutral, then one should think, the reason that I can't gain liberation from this world is because of constantly generating faulty conceptions. If I remain with such a behavior, in my next life there is no certainty I shall be able to gain a higher realm. not to mention liberation. Omniscience?
Omniscience.
Omniscience. Thank you. Even in this life, I will become the laughingstock of gods and worldlings. Produce such thoughts as much as one can. Yes.
What did we just go through? We just went through the contemplation stage of the three steps of listening, contemplation, and meditation. So you go through all that in your mind and you get it all straight, and then you summarize it into something succinct, and then you meditate on that conclusion. So just point that out, yeah. Thank you. Would somebody else like to read?
Sure.
Linda, would you like to
read?
Sure. Moreover, if motivated by the attainment of fame and gain for this life, and hoping to look good in the eyes of others, one's behavior appears to be temporarily beautiful, and one appears to be diligent in moral conduct, hearing, and contemplation, then one should think, what is the use of appearing good in the eyes of others when my practice does not counteract the affliction? When my practice does counteract the afflictions, then even if it is not beautiful, what have I got to lose? If my practice, the antidote, is conquered by the afflictions which are to be rejected, and my religious conduct, which is to be guarded, is lost, then it is like a medicine that could not be digested and became poison. This kind of verbal and artificial religion can deceive other ordinary beings who are not able to see through it. However, I cannot deceive the Buddhas in the Buddha's office, who see with unobstructed eyes. They will be displeased with me, and my aims and objectives for generations of lives will be rendered meaningless. If this happens, then there's no greater destruction to myself. Thus think and recollect all of one's faults as much as one can, as it was said.
Oh, excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you. So there's another way of saying this, which is taught, which is that anything that you say or publicize is weakened. So if you do a meritorious act and then you go around bragging about it, it reduces the amount of merit that you accumulate. On the other hand, if you commit a sin or a non-virtue and you confess it, it reduces the impact karmically of the non-virtue too. So there's this idea of confessing your faults and being quiet about your good qualities.
As it was said in Shantideva, I dwell always before all the Buddhas and the Buddha's office who are endowed with unobstructed vision that penetrates everywhere. Having thought thus, one should remain possessed of shame, respect, and fear. By that, the remembrance of the Enlightened One will also arise in one again and again. Furthermore, one should think, if I have to follow the advice of a doctor to cure an ordinary disease, then there would be no greater food than I if I didn't act in accordance with the Buddhas. A doctor to whom there were none prior instructions of acceptance and rejection, while I am in conditions of such suffering as from the illness of the afflictions and karma confined to the bed of worldly existence and rolling about due to the illness of the three sufferings, thus one should be diligent in acceptance and rejection. As it was said in Shantideva, if one must obey the doctor's advice when caught by an ordinary illness, then how much more so when one is always seized by 100 diseases such as desire and the like? If all the people inhabiting this world can be destroyed by just one of these, and if no other medicine to cure them can be found in any quarter, then the idea of not acting in accordance with the omniscient doctor's instructions that allay every pain is very ignorant and an object of blame.
There's a saying that you should see the Buddha as the doctor, the Dharma as the medicine, the Sangha as the nurse, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha as the nurse. Yeah.
In brief, the happiness and suffering of this life and the following ones are entirely dependent upon the actions of virtue and non-virtue. Therefore, the practice of distinguishing the objects to be accepted and rejected is of utmost importance. As it was said in a sutra, these beings are those who are produced and sustained by karma, who experience a share of karma and who accept karma as their possession. Those who are produced and sustained by karma refers to the fact that all good and bad births and places are created by karma. Those who experience a share of karma refers to the fact that each happiness and suffering is produced by its individual causal virtue and non-virtue. Those who accept karma as their possession refers to the fact that the creator of karma must experience the results of one's own actions. As it was said in Karma Sataka, the sage taught that the suffering and happiness of living beings are the result of karma. From various types of karma are produced the various types of sentient beings who perform various activities such as entering and wandering in this great net of karma. It may be asked, if this is so, then how is it that we see some persons who indulge in non-virtuous action in this life enjoying great happiness? This enjoyment of happiness is not the result of deeds in this life, but of virtuous actions in their previous lives, which are ripening here. The result of non-virtuous actions that one has done in this life will be experienced in the following lives. Furthermore, that some persons engaged in great sin enjoy some happiness than other people was taught to be a sign that, because of the power of great sin that one has committed here, the results of all the virtuous actions that one has accumulated in one's previous lives, which were to be experienced in one's future lives, are exhausted merely in the enjoyment of this life. Hereafter, one will experience only suffering.
Yeah, did you ever wonder about that? A lot of people wonder about this. How come that evil person is winning the lottery and having all good luck? And
I was thinking of Donald Trump.
Well, we don't want to mention any names. But whereas, poor me, I'm a good guy and I can't get a break. You know, I mean, it's a fundamental human question.
Why
I think
do good things happen to bad?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people ask that question, and here's the answer. And the part that I think is particularly interesting here is that all the good stuff that they're experiencing, the evil person is experiencing, is from lifetimes and lifetimes of accumulation, and they're exhausting it.
Not
that's worth
wise.
Thinking about, too. Sorry?
And going into
wise.
The negative
yeah.
column as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You want to go ahead?
Shall I carry on? An example is the story of Neon Kingdom, of the Neon Kingdom. According to the story, it was said that the kingdom of Neon was sinful. A rain of rice and precious jewels occurred for 7 days each, and finally, for another 7 days, there was a rain of sand that submerged it. Similarly, if a practitioner of virtue suffers illness and the like, then this is not the result of the virtuous actions performed in this life, but the remainder of ripened results of non-virtuous actions of previous lives. That some person engaged in great virtue suffers more than others was taught to be a sign that, because of the power of great virtue that one has committed here, the results of all the non-virtuous actions that one accumulated in one's previous lives, which were to be experienced in one's future lives, are exhausted merely in the suffering of this life. Hereafter, one will not have to experience suffering.
I heard a very great and famous Lama say one time that if you are a practitioner and you have a headache, that's probably erasing a rebirth in hell realm or something really severe. Even though you have this awful headache and you think, oh my God, the coming of it, the ripening of it is actually you're getting off easy if you're a practitioner. So that's another thing that I think is worth, you know, remembering if you have a bad headache. Oh my God.
I won't complain when I get a sinus
yeah.
headache.
Count your blessings.
Yeah.
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 One will not have to experience suffering. As it was said in the Vajra Dika.
Yeah, that's a sutra.
Yeah. Saputi, noble sons and daughters, who memorize the words of a sutra like this, who retain its meaning, who keep it, who read and understand it, will suffer greatly. If it is asked, why is this so? Suhuti, the afflictions accumulated in their previous lives, and which potentially could cause them to gain rebirth in lower realms, are experienced in this life. And because of this, all their non-virtuous actions will be exhausted, and they will gain enlightenment of a Buddha. Therefore, if a genuine practitioner of the Dharma suffers like that, one should not think, well, it's not appropriate that this kind of suffering should happen to me, so there is no truth to the law of cause and effect. Instead, it is reasonable to be happy about it. As it was said in the Bodhicaryavatara, if a man who was to be executed had his hand cut off instead and was released, isn't this wonderful? If by human suffering one parts from hell, isn't this wonderful? Therefore, if one has great faith in the law of cause and effect and properly practices acceptance and rejection, it is sure that one will not be reborn in the lower realms. As it was stated by Acharya Aryadeva, if one who is endowed with the great perfect view of the world, it will be impossible to be born in lower realms even for 1,000 eons. Up to this point, the teaching, which is common to the path of the Bodhi and the Shravaka, has been shown.
Okay.
Period.
So that is the end of a major section of this text.
Is there a test?
Yeah, your life. And your next life. And your next life. So we finished. What did we finish? The impure vision section. 112 pages. So I would like to not go into the next section, the vision of experience, which will be very interesting, but it's a whole other section. Does anybody have any comments so far? We've done 14 sessions. What's your experience? What are you getting anything out of this?
Absolutely.
Well, I'd like to hear what people's experience is, if you want to share. Or comments, complaints.
This last part especially is resonating with me because you're saying you ask these questions like why is that guy so great? And the explanation of the karma involved is making sense to me. And also that if you're suffering in this life, that might be a good thing because you're exhausting.
Working off negative karma,
right? So that just makes me feel happier. Yeah.
I think for me personally, it's like, first of all, I think it gives me quite a bit of guidelines, because I've always wondered that. It's like, how should I behave in the world? I can be anything and do anything, and it's like, okay, where are these guidelines? What is this about? And also like the intention being the most important thing rather than the actual action itself. I like that a lot, and I think that covers a lot of discrepancies within things, because life is really complex and there's many layers all the time. Lots of facets. So for me, it's like, a good foundation. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's easy to overlook this section because it's dark to start with. It's not the fun part for sure. And so I appreciate that. I've been held in my seat and paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we lost half the class and we were going through the hell realms.
Well, it was summer vacation.
But we've come out the other side and now we're headed for the vision of experience. Mm-hmm. And now it gets really interesting. So stay tuned. Any other comments anybody wants to make?
about halfway.
Yeah, we've done 112 pages. We're like halfway. Wow.
I just noticed in this from the Lug, a difference from the Lug teachings in terms of how karma manifests itself. That I was taught four ways it manifested. The one that isn't included in here is the form you take in your next life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones, action similar to the cause and the environment and actually the character you're born with, your personality.
Yeah.
The type of person you are if you're born in human form.
Yeah. I'm sure Norchen Kuntrik Lundrup could have written a book of 2,000 pages easily.
Yeah. Just noticing the slight little differences between them.
Yeah, and the other thing that I remind myself is that karma is only understood fully by a fully enlightened Buddha.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. When we get there, we'll find out the rest, you know. But I think that it's quite a bit here, you know, like, there are some people that are following this online, and I'm in contact with them regularly. And one of the comments they made, one of the people made, was that they didn't realize that the type of country or environment or land that you're born in is directly determined by your karma. Is it arid? Is it dusty?
Is it a refugee camp?
All these things are karmic. Yeah.
Every moment.
Yeah.
You're born into war. Mm-hmm. All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
And then what do you do with it?
Well, that's the whole thing, is how you deal with it, right?
Yeah.
It's not what happens to you,
how you respond.
How you handle it.
That's right.
Yeah. Lama and I both have lousy teeth. I have to go to the dentist again next week, which will be the 17th time since COVID hit.
Ouch.
And so he and I lament about our teeth all the time. Oh, we're burning off teeth karma, you know.
Did you bite somebody in a previous life?
I don't know, but it's better than a hell realm.
It is.
But not much. And it's darn expensive, too. But anyway,
yeah,
it's important. We have teeth discussions about, well, what practice do you say while they're drilling on you and you're going crazy with pain? You know, oh, I say green tara practice. So,
yeah. Give me more.
So we commiserate. But it's helpful to have somebody that, you know, supports you in your misery, you know, and reminds you, oh, this
is...
Someone
has the same problem.
Yeah, this is really okay. It's just you're burning off karma, you know, and big lumps of it. Yeah.
Well, what I find so wonderful, returning here after some time, what has been for me 4 years of severe illness, is the camaraderie and... the lovely flow of enthusiasm that energizes this work. I lay on a couch for 2 years, unable to get up. And I thought about this kind of communion. It's lovely.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You brought it to you.
What?
You brought it to you.
Welcome back.
You burned off some serious karma as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And plus, just COVID. Everybody suffered from COVID and the isolation and the center being shut down and all that stuff we all went through together.
I was just talking with Lotus and asking after Michael, and she said that during the 2 years of the COVID, none of his carers were really talking to him. And so he's lost the ability to speak.
Is he in a care home now?
He's in Mount St. Mary's.
Oh, that's a good place.
Okay, well, thank you all for sharing. I really appreciate that. Sometimes I wonder what's going on with people, so it's good to hear some feedback. So let's conclude with our dedication. So nam de tam jesu pani tom nam ye pe da nam pam je ke le ga na chi ma lung tru pe yi si pe tso le do wa du wa sho chang chu sem cho rin po chin Make panam ke guchi ke nam nam ni parayam gong ni gong tu pel parsho jam pa pa wo ji tar ken pa dam kun tu sang po de yang de shin ke le da kun gi je su da lu chi ke wa di da tam je ra tu mo tu su she pi gya wa tam je ki no wa gang wa chu du na pa gi da chen ge we tsa wa di kun kyang sang po jo je ra tu mu wa gi chang sa wa dong chu ching sha pa dong jizu yi rong gu shi su wa yi ye wa chung zhe da yi chi sa pa tam chi zo pa chang chu chi.
By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy of wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way thou manjushris, nantabhadra, know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I might train to be like them. In this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attain Buddhahood. May whatever virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, dedicate to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.